It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, good morning all. Hey, folks, Mark Riley, how you doing, buddy?
All right, man, I'm doing all right.
Good. You're back in the house? You're
back
out of
the
hotel,
house, yeah.
Back at home. Good. Hey, if you want to come see Mark and I in person, tomorrow's the day. We're going to be performing live tomorrow at City Bakery here in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9. We'll be doing the show from there. We'll have free coffee for everyone, T-shirts, all kinds of goodies for people who get there early. Musician Mike Doty is going to hang out for like an hour or so and play live and talk to us. New York Post gossip columnist Paula Froelich will dish some dirt on whoever. I don't know who. We got Mort Milvington, the Cardinals, coming.
He's coming.
Lawton Smalls is going to be there.
Lawton, too?
Sure, he's going to be there.
Line him up.
Yeah, we're going to do the liberal aggressor, the guy from Poodle, or
he's coming?
Or Balls, or
whichever.
What was the last one?
T-Bag. Yeah.
I don't know what he's got coming up, but he's going to be there. I'll be.
I hear he's going to teabag you.
Oh no, not lies. Right. Really? In front of everybody? I'll be at Gotham Comedy on Friday and Saturday. If you want to come down, it's www.gothamcomedyclub.com. I'm not going to pressure anybody. I'm going to try and work out some new material, hang out a little bit, me and a few other comics. You know what? Riley, I got to be honest with you. I had one of these moments last night where, you know, I haven't drank in almost 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm pretty good with that. You know, I do the recovery thing. I'm
wait
proud
a minute. What drove you to the brink last night?
I'm proud to be sober. Yeah, it's the weirdest thing, dude. And this has happened before. I'm watching a show on the Food Network.
Uh-huh.
I'm watching a show on the Food Network. It's a half-hour show, and it's profiling booze. All right? And it's profiling a part of Kentucky where they make bourbon. It goes to the Maker's Mark factory, and it starts talking about Maker's Mark bourbon and the history of bourbon and the idea of, you know, taking bourbon out of the rural gutter, you know, and making it a legitimate liquor.
Hey, wait a minute. This respect. Isn't the thing with the 50 different filters on it and the big silo.
Well, no, it was similar to that.
Because I saw a documentary about that, too.
It wasn't a big silo. What it was is that they give the history of Maker's Mark about the couple that that decided to try to make bourbon a legitimate liquor,
okay,
like, you know, a respectable liquor like scotch or something else, or rye or whiskey, some of the other whiskeys, I guess, like McClellan's. That's not a scotch, though, is it?
McGregor.
I wasn't a scotch drinker, and if I did drink scotch, it was one of the labels. You know what I'm saying? Black label, gold label, whatever's around. But I liked bourbon. Well, here's what happens. I'm watching this show, and they're showing how it's made. We toast the grain. And I'm like, wow, toasting grain? That's healthy. You know what I mean? So here's what I'm saying. Look at the toasting the grain. They care about it.
Oh, yeah, getting your minimum daily adult requirements,
right,
doesn't it?
I'm doing that Bill Cosby riff on the cake. You know when he gets up and the kids want to, you know, eat chocolate cake, so he rationalizes in his head there's eggs, there's flour, they got everything they need, so why not give them cake for breakfast? So I'm watching this thing, and they're toasting the grain, and they're putting it in this machine, and they're adding the corn. I'm like, corn? That's healthy?
Corn,
right?
And grain.
Right, corn and grain. That sounds like something I'm making bread, you know, my little health kick that I'm on. So I'm watching them mix that up, then they ferment it, and then they put it in nice wooden barrels for 6 years, like the commitment, and then they take it out, and it's brown and beautiful, and they pour it in a glass, and I'm thinking, man, I could use some of that, and besides that, it's healthy. It's corn and grain. How can that be bad for you? And I felt that Jones, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I haven't felt that in a long time. That's sort of like that weird little itch inside where it's like, I want to glass of bourbon. And they're showing how they dip the Maker's Mark bottles into the wax for the seal. Dude, I hadn't had that in a long time. Every time I watch a show like that, I watched one about how they make money, and it made me want to have money. Did you?
See, I got no. What happens with me is it's like smells. Like for me, it was wanting to eat red meat when, you know, you go to a nice barbecue and you smell all the different smells and the wood and all of that.
Oh,
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, I haven't eaten red meat in like a decade. But every now and then I get around that stuff and you go, oh, man.
Right.
You just want to have a burger.
That happened to me last night, too, watching the same damn channel. The guy's talking about cast iron skillets.
Yeah.
Curing skillets. And I'm a sucker for food stuff, man, because that's all I do at home. My wife's in California, hopefully not sliding down the hill
uh-oh
in my house. Man, if my property values are going to go down, let's get to that one second. But I'm watching this guy. He seasons a skillet, and he cooks his beautiful T-bone in the skillet. And I'm like, I got a skillet. I got a butcher across the street. Why am I holding back? It's time for bourbon and steak. Let's do this thing. But I got past it, thank God.
You got past it. There you go.
At Laguna Beach yesterday, that was unbelievable. Six homes. What was that? Just slid down the hill?
Slid down. Actually, I think it was more like 11 of them all together had damage or
something.
Wow.
Six homes had major damage. That's it, yeah.
Now, here's my question to you, Mark.
20 had some damage. This happens in California. Things just slide down the hill.
I know, but now, you live out there. You have a home out there.
Yes.
Okay, your wife lives out there.
Yeah.
Do you feel sympathy for people where the starting fixer-upper home price is $1.5 million?
But
they told them not to build there 30 years ago.
This is going to be a real fixer-upper. You're going to have to put it back on the hill.
Yeah.
You had to pull that thing back up there. Sympathy, sure, I have sympathy. What a horrible thing that, you know, but just
sitting
in your
houses are gone.
To hear a horrible
rumbling
and not know whether it's an earthquake or your house is sliding down the hill. But as we were talking about before the show, there's something about Southern California. When people want to live there, they're willing to take these risks. You go out there, people will just build a house on stilts, sitting on the edge of a mountain with nothing under it, just on stilts.
I know, and you know, some people are blaming one house. Can you imagine this? One house for this mudslide. Now, this is not, you know, the local officials who are saying, look, it's a lot of rain. It happened over the winter, and that's the real reason why the earth got
unstable. A lot of rain.
But there are people in the area that say this one 5,500-square-foot house, which is a gigantic house, was built in the wrong place, and they're believing that the size of the house is what caused the mudslide. Now, I don't know whether that would be true.
They got to blame something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I like living in New York. It's like the only thing I got to worry about is whether or not the Pakistani guy downstairs is going to start a grease fire. Did you know they had the...
Wait a minute, he's not the peanut guy.
Not the peanut guy. Oh. This guy, I don't know. I'm judging. He might be Indian. I'm not sure where he's from. He could be Bangladeshi. But he's a nice guy. He's a cab driver. I always talk to him about the building. But apparently, he had some, like a kettle or something in there that they just weren't, the fire department came because a grease fire started in the guy's kitchen that he couldn't put out.
I know what that's like. My late dad, rest his soul, one night, toward the end of his life, actually, started, you know, he woke up in the middle of the night, put a frying pan on the grill, turned it on, and then walked away and went back to sleep. I woke up in the middle of the night, the whole apartment's full of smoke.
Fire scares me. To my credit, I only checked the stove 20 times before I left today. You know what I mean? Only 20, and it was off, I think.
Ever made your driver go back because you thought you left it on?
Yeah. You know what the other one is?
Like, I knew you had done that.
Did I leave the door open? Did I leave the door open? Like, you know, why all of a sudden, if you think about something, like this will be the one day that I don't lock the door. I don't know what that is with that OCD thing, that fear thing. I don't know why it circulates like that. So what the hell is Al Sharpton doing?
He's supposedly taking talk show lessons. First of all, that's comical enough as it is that you have to take talk show lessons in order to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
But he's supposedly taking talk show lessons from none other than the bloviator himself, Rush Limbaugh.
But this is sort of like, this is a promotional thing for both of them. I mean, this is counter usage.
Promotional consideration provided by.
And yeah.
I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, for both of them.
For both of them. It gives Rush Limbaugh, I guess, a previously uncharted inroad into the black community. Nobody black listens to him now. And it gives Al Sharpton another way. It's another couple of news cycles out of the deal.
The deal was that Limbaugh invited him onto his show to give him some pointers because he's going to be doing a show with the same company as Limbaugh?
No, not the same company.
Okay.
Something called Matrix Media out of Chicago, which right now has an exercise show and a pet show.
So they want to bring... actually, Al Sharpton's probably going to be competing with Air America in the sense that it's going to be a left-wing bloviation show.
That's then we shouldn't talk about
him. I know, really.
No, I'm only kidding.
I don't mind talking to him.
I know Al Sharpton since Short Pants days, all right? He was the boy preacher. It's business, all right?
Yeah, by any means necessary for Sharpton. That's what this is about. But look, you know, coming up next, we're going to talk about the sales. People, you know, in Pakistan and Afghanistan, a lot of these different countries, in Iraq, have been selling detainees to the United States. No wonder there's torture. They're trying to get their money's worth. Next on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York State District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
1-800-243-1483. That's 1-800-243-1483. Call Stop Sign right now. 1-800-243-1483.
20 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We'll be at City Bakery tomorrow live, doing our show there on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues, 6 to 9 a.m. Come down with some free coffee, some T-shirts, some goodies for people that get there first.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Swag.
Swag. I will be at the Gotham Comedy Club Friday and Saturday night. But most importantly, it seems that there was a thriving business in Pakistan and Afghanistan for warlords and whoever wanted to start turning in detainees for money. Apparently, there was a lot of money being funneled in to these countries through, through a couple of one legitimate program, I guess, here in the United States, if I'm reading this properly, which was only supposed to pay for information. Some $57 million have been paid under the Rewards for Justice program.
Yeah, the Rewards for Justice program. Mark Maron, I thought slavery in this country ended back in 1863, but if this story is to be believed, Americans are somehow involved in the trafficking of human flesh here.
Yeah, and under the guise, I guess, of, or is that, well, it's trafficking of human flesh, it's interesting, but it's not necessarily for labor, right? It's like they were actually supporting a business that was happening in Afghanistan and Pakistan where Muslims would actually turn in other Muslims, if they could, from other countries. Apparently, there were Chinese Muslims, Afghani Muslims lured into Pakistan and sort of welcomed in by certain parties saying,
yeah,
here's some dinner, and by the way, here's your cage, give me $5,000, and they were shipped, some of them, to Gitmo.
Yeah, and I mean, again, that's in United States custody. So, yeah, America was probably not directly paying warlords for people, but then the question becomes, you know, exactly how culpable, how guilty, and who exactly are the people that are being detained at Gitmo? We don't know yet how many people came through this route and how many of them are still at Gitmo and what they're being charged with or why they're being detained.
It's also completely throws into question the source of the person that turned them in. I mean, if somebody's making a profit off of somebody, why the hell wouldn't you just say, yeah, he's a terrorist?
Yeah.
Can I have $5,000?
And the larger question for me, Mark, is, you know, if they can do this, if they can have this kind of trafficking at the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, guess who else is supposed to be somewhere around the Afghanistan-Pakistan border?
Osama.
Yeah, now he's got 25 mil on his head.
Right.
So how come they haven't got him yet?
Yeah, they're probably afraid of him. And, you know,
what I would say.
And it seems to me that some of these Muslims are not necessarily Afghani. So, I mean, this is like not necessarily infighting, but if it's a business, if these warlords only care about themselves, their opium crop, and there's certain people that are just there, they're entrepreneurs in this evil business, why not just kidnap Muslims from other countries who come into Afghanistan to fight Americans or to do whatever they're doing there to make a pilgrimage to Pakistan? Why not just kidnap them? I mean, there's kidnapping in Iraq all the time. Just freelance kidnappers who kidnap potential hostages.
Yeah.
But this also throws a whole different spin on the idea of torture and detainees in Gitmo. I mean, on some level, if they pay money for these detainees, why wouldn't they also think in terms of, say, you know, like the American government say, well, we paid money for these guys.
Yeah.
Let's beat it out of them. I mean, these guys cost good money. Why? We better get some information out of them. But it throws into question all of it. You know, the sources of why these guys are at Gitmo. And also, the other thing that really bothers me is this blaming amnesty thing. You know, I was reading...
Oh, that's Rumsfeld.
Right, but I was reading this piece that apparently, before, you know, the invasion of Iraq, the Bush administration cited Amnesty International reports on Saddam Hussein's violation of human rights, but now all of them, Cheney, Bush, they're all saying this Amnesty report about American human rights records and torture at Gitmo, it's absurd. It's ridiculous. But Cheney said he was offended, yet they trusted the credibility of Amnesty before when they needed them.
That's called politics.
Absolutely.
Right? You use who you can to bolster your case or your agenda, but if they don't bolster your case or agenda, or if they criticize you in any way, then your next task is to make them look like fools, to make them look like they have no credibility. And that's what, you know, everybody, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, the big three, they're all attacking amnesty. And again, as you very correctly point out, they used them just 2 years ago.
To justify
the invasion. Saddam Hussein was doing this, Saddam Hussein. And, you know, amnesty was right. He was doing those things. But the bottom line is you cannot now turn around and say, when they criticize you, that criticism is totally unfounded. And, of course, Rumsfeld never misses the opportunity, Mark, to blame the media.
Blame the media, blame Newsweek, blame Amnesty International.
Blame somebody.
Yeah, and he comes out the other day, this was in Washington, and he actually said, he admitted that there had been instances of detainee abuses, i.e. torture, including some that were grievous. He said these cases were being investigated. And then he does some weird numbers crunching.
Yeah.
You like that, huh? Well, this is how he spins it, because he's really just a number cruncher. He's a CEO guy. He's a guy that, you know, he's the one responsible for unmanning, you know, sort of under-equipping and under-manning the armed forces. So he says that there have been 68,000 detainees in U.S. custody since the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, and there have been approximately 370 criminal investigations into the charges of misconduct. So he's sitting there going, hey, those odds aren't bad.
No. You know what he did? I'm going to tell you exactly what this man did. He picked up the phone, he called some staffer somewhere and said, get me some numbers, all right? I need some numbers to refute this foolishness.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and somebody came to, you know, Mr. Secretary, there have been 68,000 detained. That many? I didn't know there were that many.
68,000. Give me some good number to buffer this.
Yes. So there have been 370 criminal investigations.
But he cops to the fact that there have been torture.
He said there's been torture. But that's, you know, that's not for people to worry about.
Right, it's such a small number.
It's such a small number. You should be focusing on other things.
These renegade evil underlings did that. But obviously it was institutional, and obviously they're willing to blame Amnesty International. Amnesty International for telling the truth.
And they will continue to do this kind of thing until this man is gone in 2008. Mark, that's the scary part. They've got 3 more years to do this nonsense.
But there's been a lot of reports that the lame duckness is setting in.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
real lame.
I think we might have me on the line in 2050. Is that possible?
Is that possible? We'll find out next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
With good music, good vibes, and good conversation. Don't miss the next Kyle Jason Show, baby, right here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Who's that?
Morning Sedition is the program. Who is that, Chris?
Soul Coffee.
Mike Doty. His old band, Mike Doty, who will be with us tomorrow at City Bakery. If you want to come down and see us live from 6 to 9, it's on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue.
I knew I liked that boy, Doty.
Yeah, he's great. 6 to 9, we're going to have coffee, free coffee. We're going to have gifts for some of the people that come first, T-shirts, little grab bags and whatnot. Doty's going to be there, and Paula Froelich is going to be there. Maybe we'll have some games. The Cardinal Milfington is going to be there.
Yeah.
In just a few minutes, we're going to talk about, it looks like in South Korea, they're going to be opening their first stem cell bank by the end of the year. We'll get into that in just a second.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy.
Yes.
Sorry to bother you, man, but Future Mark is on line one.
Future Mark, that guy's great. Put him through.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
So what's going on 50 years from today?
Well, I just got back from an Al-Qaeda barber.
What are you talking about, man? Are you pulling my chain?
No, it was fun. Al-Qaeda had a Memorial Day thing this weekend. Barbecue, baseball, we blew up some cars, stuff like that.
Okay, I'm really lost now. Al-Qaeda's in America, and they do stuff for Memorial Day?
Okay, buddy, look, here's the deal. You know that whole war on terror you've got going now?
Yeah.
We lost.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not as bad as you think. The Islamic extremists, they came over here, they got turned on by all the powers and goodies, moved into the capital, and sort of just, you know, became like us. They wanted to be Americans. They just didn't know it until they got here.
So when did this happen?
Around 2020, after America went bankrupt and the Chinese confiscated our army and our weapons. So the Al-Qaeda thing was more of a, you know, it was like a corporate takeover. They kind of saved our asses, actually.
Unbelievable. We lost. So what's has everything changed?
Well, no, not.
Oh my God. Is that what I think it is?
There is no God but Allah, Mark. Salam alaikum, my brother.
I just don't believe this. America turned Islamic?
Well, not really. We only have to hit the carpet a couple times a day. Nobody really prays, though. And the religious police only crack down during Ramadan.
So wasn't there any kind of resistance? Did anyone fight back?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was some rock throwing in the beginning. But then the Islamists threw this huge kegger. You know, sort of a mixer. We all got to know each other better. Everybody got pretty messed up. There was a lot of hugging, that whole you're my best friend thing afterwards. And we were all like, yeah, you can stay. You know, the kegger was really the masterstroke. Everyone just caved.
So I'm trying to wrap my head around this. You... me actually joined Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, yeah, but it's kind of like the Rotary or the Kiwanis Club. You know, it's just a resume builder, networking type thing. You know, I may want to run for a Shia council on these days.
What's going on?
I have to go make an appearance at the protest. We're burning the Saudi flag today.
The Saudi flag? I mean, why would you burn the Saudi flag?
Well, after the Muslims won the war on terror, the entire Middle East turned Presbyterian. Those contrary bastards. Excuse me a second. Death to the unclean Presbyterian infidels. Death to Saudi Arabia.
Whoa. Wow.
There, I should do it.
I'm just blown away by this whole thing. I mean, I got to go think about this. Damn. Oh, yeah. Is there anything that you want me to look out for? Anything you have to warn me about before I take off here?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is actually a couple years down the road, but they're going to outlaw smoking.
Huh.
And the tobacco industry is going to come out with this new thing. It's an oil that you massage into your temples.
What's it for?
Well, it's supposed to control your appetite, make you look cool, and give you something to do with your hands at party. All right? They're going to say it's not addictive.
Uh-huh.
But it is.
Really?
Oh, merciful Allah, it is.
Oh.
So stay away from it.
Okay. All right. Well... thanks.
Uh-huh.
Salam alaikum, I guess.
Alaikum salam to you, Mark. See ya.
Uh-huh. It gets weird. It's going to get weird. Am I coming through there? Okay. Wow.
You got the same short in your headphones as I did?
No, I was happy it's not in my head.
Oh.
You know? Maybe it's just in the headphones. But look at this. South Korean cloning pioneer Hwang Woo-suk said Wednesday that he plans to open a stem cell bank by the end of the year, Riley. By the end of the year, something that will probably never happen in this country because of religious fanatics who want to regress this country back to the days of maybe the turn of the century.
Yeah, you know what? Is Johnny K Street coming here later? Because I want to put some money on Hwang Woo-suk for the Nobel Prize.
But I
think he's going to win.
He's going to win. But how about the business of stem cells? And also, like, I have some big questions about this. I'm very pissed off that religious fanatics need to corner this frame. What they're trying to do, really, I think, the religious fanatics, in terms of stem cell, is change the cultural language. They're trying to get everyone to look at embryonic stem cells as human beings, which they're not. This was, to me, a very telling quote from Hwang Woo-suk, who said, quote, "What we are doing is not creating embryos. An embryo basically supposes a birth of a life, but we have no intention or goals whatsoever to create life." It's a very interesting way of isolating the idea and the reality of the embryo. The embryo is what it is. What it becomes has nothing to do with anything. Because even these religious fanatics, of the 400 and some odd thousand embryos that exist in the banks today in this country, only 9,000 are up for open donation.
Yes.
The rest are donated by donors who want them for themselves. And what I don't understand is, how do these people rationalize, you know, when someone gets in vitro?
Yes.
It could take 4 or 5 times. Okay?
It could take more than that.
Right, and it may never take. So those embryos become, you know, garbage. There's nothing to it. So let's say you're a member of this snowflake organization.
Yeah.
Okay? These religious fanatics, Rod Studdart, the executive director of Nightlight Christian Adoption Agency. This guy is one of these, you know, he's a guy that's trying to shift the frame. He's a guy that basically supports that. You know, they're supposedly so pro-life, and they want all these embryos to have parents, and they want all these embryos to find wombs where they can grow in, but not if the embryo isn't a conservative Christian household, not if the embryo is a gay household.
I think there may be a slight microphone problem that we will get adjusted momentarily, but you're right. It is really about, for these individuals, the ability to control who will end up with their embryos. But, you know, the work that Hwang Woo-suk has been doing is important for people to understand. What he's done has been to create these stem cells that will not be rejected by injured parties. In other words, to create exact genetic matches.
Through cloning.
Through cloning, yeah.
They take DNA from the individual who is ill or the patient and create embryonic stem cells that will help them grow tissue. He also says that he's going to be able to hopefully grow organs, you know, fairly shortly. But this kind of stuff will never happen in America because of these religious fanatics unless we fight it on a state level. Several states are
fighting it as we speak. And I got to tell you, Mark, I think that eventually the demand in this country from people who want to have, who have these kinds of various injuries, I should say, that can only be dealt with through these procedures. Eventually that demand will cause folks to, I hope, choose pragmatic benefits to their health as opposed to this religious foolishness that the country is now wrapped up in.
Well, I'll tell you, states like Massachusetts, Connecticut, California, who are going to fund, you know, federally fund some stem cell research, which are blue states, I bet your life that as soon as one of these red state people, one of these, you know, conservative Republican whack jobs gets sick, they're going to be like, man, we got to go to Massachusetts and get this help. You know, and that the long-term vision for the separation between states is very interesting to me because the states that are now operating in the classic conservative way, which is honoring states' rights, are turning out to be blue states.
Blue states, yeah.
And now the federal government has a lot invested in the red states, you know, buying their party line, which is anti-progress on a scientific level. But what I really want to know, and if somebody could help me, you know, with a phone call, is how do one of these Christian fanatics, you know, rationalize the fact that let's say they want to be impregnated by one of these stem cells, one of these embryos that's going to be used for stem cell research or not, but one of these embryos, and it takes 10 of them. All right, so they go through 10 of these embryos, and maybe one takes, or let's say none of them takes. So those 10 embryos are now garbage. How do they rationalize that? What's the difference between their will and God's will? Do they say, well, it must have been God's will for those 10 to be garbage? Or do they take responsibility for themselves and say, like, oh, my God, what have I done?
Have you murdered 10? Have you murdered 10 people? Because they are saying that the embryos are, in fact, life.
And yet they claim to respect life, but yet they'll draw lines allowing embryos to be, you know, brought to life in lesbian or homosexual male couples. They don't want them to be brought up in a liberal environment. Like, they're very specific. They'd rather keep them dead and frozen than have them, you know, brought to life in an environment that they don't agree with.
Hey, wait a minute. You want to send your kids to public school? No, thank you. You can't have my embryo.
That's right. So they want to own the embryos. They don't want to put it forth for any research, only if it's brought up in a home that they can agree with. 866-303-2270. If you can tell me, you know, how do they rationalize that? And if it's God's will, how do they, you know, say, why won't they allow it to be, well, maybe medical research is God's will. Maybe that embryo is supposed to help hundreds of people.
Maybe cure Alzheimer's. You know, possible benefits of this research that this guy's been doing is just incredible to contemplate. Absolutely incredible in terms of being able to cure diseases and with a very high degree of certainty here, Mark. I mean, you're talking about literally being able to replace. You mentioned he thinks that he will be able to create organs, whole organs.
Yeah, and stem cells are bastards. You know, I'll tell you, we interviewed one, and we might play that coming up next here on Air America Radio.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now how's that gonna look in a deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Now to clear my name.
Next message.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With reason. This is Air America Radio.
Now, 800-396-9711, 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
49 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to be at City Bakery tomorrow here in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. Mike Doty's going to be with us playing some songs. Paula Froelich from the New York Post is going to dish some dirt on people here in New York. We'll have free coffee, give away some T-shirts, some mugs, some goodies to early comers. And come on down, and you can touch Mark Riley.
Oh, no, you don't.
Hey, you tired of paying so much money at the pump? Well, you know, it might be because the king of Saudi Arabia is ill. How do you like that? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Right now, I want to play something we had yesterday, which is an interview we did with this, he's becoming a regular guest, this really nasty stem cell named Sammy. So look, to help us sort out some of the controversy surrounding stem cell research in the upcoming vote in Congress, we have a special guest. It's the second time on the show, Sammy the Stem Cell. Good morning, Sammy. How are you?
Hi, I'm Sammy the Stem Cell.
Sammy, last week I think we kind of got started off on the wrong foot. And look, I just wanted to apologize.
Back off, loser! I'm an innocent life. I'm a unique, living, integrated human person. I'm a tough mofo, so get used to it, you dumb heap.
Whoa. Like I said last time, you're not human. You're just a water cell. Did you just call me a dumb heap?
You just call me a blastocyst?
A what?
Yeah, you heard me, Christ killer.
Hey.
Blastocyst. I'm a fully functioning person. You'll find that out later when you're extricating my foot from your ass.
Whoa, what did you just say?
Yeah, from your ass.
What did you just say?
You heard me. You have trouble hearing behind me.
Whoa.
Let me turn it up for you.
Whoa, man, not this again.
That's right. I'm giving you the finger, flipping you the bird.
Okay, Sammy. When and where does life begin?
Right now, in my pants, loser. What do you think of that?
Disgusting. You're gross, man.
And you're welcome.
Do you think your friend Bill Frist approves of like...
Hey.
What?
Whoa.
What?
Slow down.
What?
Don't you worry about Frist. Frist, Cheney, DeLay, they're all working for me anyway. I got them right in the palm of my hand, fella.
You don't have any hands.
No. You want to take this outside?
Is that a threat, Sammy?
No, all I'm saying is, turn off the music! Turn off the damn music!
Wow.
All I'm saying is, people need to be very careful about what they say. Just as they need to be careful about what they do. Okay, music.
So what, you're quoting Donald Rumsfeld? That's Rumsfeld, right?
Yeah, now I'm going to quote Tom DeLay. I'm going to kill me a roach.
Ow, my eyes! Oh, my God, this is horrible. No way, you should be killed.
Yeah, life is sacred. You can't kill me. You can't kill me. I can't even kill me.
You scare me, man. Why don't you just leave?
Why don't you just
Hey, you know what? You... No!
Right back at you, hole! In the house you rolled in on! Help the world's population explode into more sucker! Hey, why don't you adopt 400,000 embryos and you're going to hell, infidel!
Get out! My eyes!
Ow! Get my your hands off me!
Get out! This is weird! Get out!
All right! Get your hands off me!
All right, just get out. I don't want to have to throw you out. I'm getting...
Don't touch my coat!
This goop all over my hands. You're covered in goop. No, Sammy, the stem cell from yesterday. We've got some calls here. You know, we're talking a little bit about this program called Snowflakes, which arranges for women to become pregnant with embryos left over at fertility clinics. It's a Christian organization. But, you know, the question really is, I think on some level also, Riley, shouldn't it be up to the donor and to the person that wants the treatment? I mean, if somebody wants to donate embryos for medical research, so be it. Let's do the research, and if you're against it, don't get the research. You don't get to get rewarded by it.
Well, it would seem to me, you know, if you want to target, if people can target their embryos for adoption, for example, as some people choose to do, why not be able to target some of it for medical research?
I think
it would seem to be logical.
I think they do. I think they are allowed to do that. But, I mean, the question really comes around at the federal funding. Isn't that really the question?
That is an issue.
Well, let's talk to Susan. How are you, Susan? Do you have something to add to this conversation in Florida listening to WINZ?
Hi, Susan.
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Hi. What's on your mind?
If a Christian can be pro-life and support the death penalty, capital punishment, then why wouldn't they be able to reconcile in vitro fertilization and embryonic stem cell research?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no internal logic to any of it.
That's absolutely right. And the difference between playing God and believing God is just, you know, non-existent. So what, Amy, listening in New Jersey on 1190, what's going on, Amy?
Hey, Amy.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Good morning.
I guess it's just the mandate that they have to just sort of be hypocritical about everything, as Susan was saying. You know, they can rationalize that. And as I was saying to your screener, it's my understanding that with in vitro also, that if all of the eggs take and, you know, a woman has, you know, they implanted, let's say, six.
Right.
And they all take, then they have to selectively, or they have the option to selectively abort.
So they can really, they can customize that much on that level, like,
that
you know.
That's my understanding. I mean.
Well, that's interesting.
I've been through the process. But I have a relative who, yeah, that was my, what they, I was told. So I don't know if any of your listeners have more information. But anyway, the point being that, you know, that's really, even beyond a stem or stem cell, sort of like, okay, well, you have a problem with women having abortions, but you have no problem with people playing God.
Right.
Going through in vitro and then saying, oh, but I don't want that many.
Right. Yeah. And that's the whole hypocrisy of the whole thing. It's like, if they're going to allow that, why not just allow them for research as well? If they're willing to, you know, sacrifice however many of these embryos they want in the process of their own fertilizing, you know, they should just shut up and let them use them for research.
I mean, it's, you know, and once again, you know, if a woman who realizes she can't take care of a child and decides to have an abortion, you know, forget it. All hell breaks loose on her. But. No,
yet they won't take care of the child.
Right.
Yeah.
What happens to the child afterwards.
It's interesting, Amy. It looks like they call what you're talking about selective reduction. They don't call it aborting the embryo.
No, they don't call it that.
But they,
is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Thanks for your call, Amy. That's true? Selective reduction?
I'm looking at this website, which I think we had talked about once before, this bioethics website. And they talk about the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity. And I think, I don't know what their politics are, but they talk about, you know, some of the risks and that sort of thing with embryos. And they say, selective reduction, abortion of some implanted developing embryos so the others have a better chance to survive is not an ethical option. However, selective reduction should not be necessary if an appropriate number of embryos are implanted in the first place.
Yeah, and if you're willing to have six kids at once. Well, don't misunderstand this either in the sense that Ron Stoddart, this is the executive director of Nightlife Christian Adoption Agency, who puts it very clearly, quote, the best way to increase awareness of embryo adoption is controversy. The embryonic stem cell research debate has done more to publicize this than anything. Nobody's going to put pictures of the president kissing a child in your paper just to publicize an adoption program. They're very clear at shifting the frame culturally. Even those people who may not have strong beliefs about embryos are going to, you know, involuntarily, almost subconsciously, start viewing them as separate lives, as human beings. They aren't. They're embryos. They're little blobs of cells that could be used in a lot of different ways if the religious right would grow up.
I would really like to see them help some people, Mark.
Gas prices coming up next on Air America Radio. Six past the hour. It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Good morning. We are the Marks. It's Mark and Mark, morning's edition. Yeah. The facts, the fury, the funny, morning's edition, don't be stupid. How are those for plugs?
Hey.
Huh? For little catchphrases, huh? Come see us in person. We'll be broadcasting live tomorrow from City Bakery in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9 a.m. It's going to be some free coffee. We're going to have presents. We're going to have mugs, maybe a couple T-shirts, a keychain or two. Mike Doty's going to play some guitar and sing some songs. It's going to be nice. And we're inviting you to come down and have some pastries and hang out with Mark and I. We're going to have the Liberal Confessional momentarily. So if you've got something burning your heart, your little liberal heart, get ready to call us and confess that. Let's get into this story here, Riley. This is really blows me away because I can't understand the fluctuations of any sort of markets, you know, because I'm not smart. Economics baffle me, but the oil market is even more baffling because apparently prices could go up just at the whim of the fact that that King Fahd is sick.
Is sick, and he's sick just ahead of the OPEC meeting in Vienna June 15th, where the cartel is supposed to be making a decision on production levels, and you know what that means.
That means if there's a lot of oil, what, it's going to get cheaper, it's going to get more expensive. What does it mean, Riley?
Well, they've got the oil. The question is, how much of it are they going to put in the pipeline?
Yeah.
See, they got the oil.
Yeah.
The oil is not the issue. They got at least they got enough to make a whole bunch of money off of. What this situation depends on is how much they decide to actually sell. And sometimes there are all different kinds of factors that lead OPEC to say, well, we're going to tighten production levels, we're going to loosen production levels or whatever. The president meets with, you know, the Saudi
sure.
foreign minister, and next thing you know, they loosen the spigot just a little bit.
And one of the big factors, if tomorrow you're paying too much at the pump, you might just say to yourself, wow, I bet you the king of Saudi Arabia is sick.
He's sick, yeah.
And that's why it's going to cost me more to get to my job. Here's another story that brings up some concern. Apparently, detainees around the Muslim world have been bought by Americans in some respect, legally or black market-wise, but apparently there's a huge market in selling terrorist suspects to America, and a lot of them end up in Gitmo. This goes on in Pakistan, Afghanistan. Some warlords actually, in so many words, kidnap Muslims from other parts of the world, you know, feed them dinner, put them in a pen and say, come on down, we're selling detainees, which
yeah.
would explain, you know, some things. First of all, the credibility of the source. I mean, that means there's a business in selling detainees, which means that anyone could say, oh, yeah, he's a terrorist. Give me $5,000. And
yeah.
also on some perverted, demonic, evil level, if they are end up in Gitmo and they are tortured and they may be innocent, there could be some sensibility in terms of the administration or the climate of torture that's saying, well, we're going to get our money's worth out of this one. He better tell us something.
Well, see, the State Department's got a great cover for this, Mark. What they say is, well, look, we don't pay people specifically for suspected al-Qaeda fighters or whatever. The only thing that the U.S. does, and they have something called the U.S. Rewards for Justice Program, that supposedly pays only for information that leads to a capture of a suspected terrorist who is identified by name. In other words, if the State Department knows him, then they'll pay. They've supposedly paid about $57 million out of that program, but now they're saying that these bounty hunters are getting anywhere from $3,000 to $25,000 per person for this apparently reverse renditioning that they're... Can you imagine all of these people moving suspects from this country to that country to Gitmo to Egypt? To, I mean, what kind of mess are we creating here?
It's a huge mess, and it also goes along the same lines as the kidnapping business in Iraq.
Yes.
Where just freelance kidnappers, not even jihadists, will kidnap potential hostages or people they think will be valuable on the hostage market to sell to jihadists. It's disastrous, and it completely undermines any sort of, you know, credibility in terms of, you know, legitimate suspects of terrorism.
Well, yeah, and see, a lot of this, of course, has to do with either al-Qaeda and, of course, the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, which is where Osama bin Laden is supposed to be hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there's all this trafficking going there, allegedly with the complicity of at least the Pakistani government.
Yeah, who also supposedly might know where Osama is. And Musharraf might be afraid to divulge any information about that because there are factions within his own government and military and intelligence operations that are sympathetic to Osama bin Laden. There's so many things that we don't know, you know.
I know. But, you know, we had a guest not too long ago, Mark, Gary Schrone, who retired after 32 years in the CIA. You remember the guy?
Yeah.
He had written this book. And you know, Gary Schrone said when he was here with us that this kind of thing could possibly have gone on, that, yes, the United States may, in fact, be paying rewards to people who bring terror suspects to Gitmo or wherever.
Well, he said he took a suitcase full of like $3 million in cash into Afghanistan himself.
Yeah.
To help supply, warlords to fight for U.S. Special Forces. Now, what they did with that money, who the hell knows?
Yeah, it sounds like bribe money to me.
Well, I mean, I
don't know.
I don't know. I guess it depends how you look on it, because it's not legitimate. They could be seen as hiring a mercenary army.
Yeah, bounty hunters.
Right. You know, Mark, it's not always being a liberal. It's not always easy being a liberal. It's not always being a liberal. It's not always easy being a liberal. It's not always, yeah. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. Now, if you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley.
for I have sinned.
How could I ease your burden, my son?
Well, you know, everyone was making, you know, some jokes about those pictures of Saddam Hussein in his underwear last week. And I got to be honest with you. The whole thing just makes me uncomfortable. I kind of felt bad for him in a weird way.
Mark, we're talking about Saddam Hussein here. Arch criminal, murderer of thousands. He's a bad man.
Yeah, I know, but it just seems cheap and excessive, you know, that kind of thing. It shouldn't really be done, you know, to anyone. Huh?
Yeah. People shouldn't be gassed either, but he ordered that.
Yeah, I know, but it's just so embarrassing for any human being to be shown, you know, so vulnerable. And
Mark, did you see the photos of the dead marsh Arabs in their villages? That's your boy Saddam right there.
Look, Riley, I know he deserves everything he's got coming to him, but look at him. He's just like some old guy standing there in his underwear, folding his pants. I mean, I wanted to look away and say, oh, sorry, man, we'll come back when you're being evil.
I think your humanist side is getting in the way of the facts here.
No, look, I have no real pity for the guy, but seeing a picture of him like that almost makes him more human in a weird way. It kind of crushes the whole maniac dictator thing. Photos like that, you know, I mean, that would have softened Hitler if you saw him in
his underwear. So what are you actually confessing here, Mark?
Well, I guess I'm confessing that I feel bad about feeling bad for Saddam and his underpants.
Yeah, look, I think I have an idea for your penance.
All right, hit me, Brother Riley.
You know, it's getting warm outside. Yeah. I want you to go to the park, strip down to your underwear, fold your pants, and set them on the bench beside you, and I want you to read to passersby from this book, No Friends But the Mountains, The Tragic History of the Kurds.
Oh, man, people are going to think I'm crazy. And
yeah, and that would be different because...
All right, point taken.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Well, thank you, Brother Riley. I needed that. And, you know, now, if anyone else out there wants to confess to Brothers Marin and Riley,
yes,
and seek absolution, our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll be taking your confessions coming up next.
You know, whoever with his phone system can themselves in the mouth and eat their own waste. You know, that's what I say. So leave me alone. I'm trying to get a good take and replay it back on my touch tone pad. So can I play and get a good recording so I can hear how it sounds? I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
Next message.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Hope. For this wonderful free tape, call 1-800-550-6146. That's 1-800-550-6146.
Nineteen past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's morning's edition on Air America Radio.
Yes, it is.
The second episode. Is it an episode or it's actually the second...
installment.
Yeah, of the second part of... Well, it's morning's edition right up here. It's the Temple of Doom. I'm trying to think what I'm talking... The story is the Temple of Doom. It's a whole new story.
Yes.
Episode 2 will be coming up momentarily. We're taking confessions on the phone. If you got something in your heart, on your mind, weighing heavy on your progressive mind, 866-303-2270. Before we get to those, I want to check in with the people who are just tuning in. Here are a few highlights of what we already talked about on the program. It's time for today's morning sedition cliff notes. Rumsfeld defends the U.S. military against detainee abuse allegations. The defense chief also boasted the military prepared meals that suited Muslim religious beliefs, then wrapped them in pages from the Quran and flushed them down the toilet. Rumsfeld also blasted an Amnesty International report that compared U.S. prison camps to Soviet-style gulags. He argued that U.S. camps were all set in warm climates, so they were much more like, say, a Cambodian death farm. Rumsfeld says detainees were allowed to pray all the time. Prayers like, oh, God, no, please, God, no, not the host, no. All right, South Korean cloning pioneer Hwang Woo-suk plans to open a stem cell bank. It was Woo-suk's team that previously shocked the world by cloning a human embryo. Shocked them for about a minute or two, and then the world went back to wondering who Paula Abdul screwed.
Will the Reverend Al Sharpton accept Rush Limbaugh as his radio host tutor? The main thing the Reverend Al wants to learn from Rush is how to go to the bank and withdraw $10 million somebody paid you for talking on the radio. Today's race just dropped this in the conversation. You know why America hates the media coverage of the prison abuse story? Because they can't call in and vote for their favorite torturer. Wake up, sheeple. Gulag is Russian for Gitmo.
Ooh.
Those are your morning sedition cliff notes. A good batch, I might add. Now we enter the confessional. Chuck, streaming in Washington, what's your confession?
Hey, Chuck.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Show.
Oh, thank you.
Having a confession.
What's that, sir?
I like assault rifles.
Oh, my God.
A lot.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Hold up. Okay. Like that?
That was a 7.62x39. I was actually happy when they let that ban expire. I went out and bought new clips.
Oh, my God.
But other than that, I love your show. I love Air America, and I listen to you guys all the time.
Well, thanks a lot, man.
Well, there's part of your sort of like, well, use those assault rifles for good and evil.
I shoot beer cans out in the woods. That's all I do.
That's all you do with them? That's
good. So what's the appeal? You just...
They're fun to shoot. I mean, I'm ex-military, and I enjoy rifles. I enjoy target shooting, and that's all I do.
You're not saving them for some revenuers or anything, are you?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
Okay, just checking.
Mental stability's okay?
As far as I know.
Did they check under the Brady Law?
You do listen to us. That's funny. Yeah. So what's his penance?
I don't know, because I can't give this guy a penance, because I'm happy he called, because ever since that first time we started doing these confessionals and a woman said, hey, I walk around with a gun, I've been waiting for somebody else to come on with some gun stuff, and here comes Chuck.
Well, they're all legal, too.
Okay, there you go.
Well, is there any way that you can get involved in some sort of gun safety program? Can you help people understand? Wow.
Well,
that's a good idea. Yeah.
I mean, it just seems to me that, a lot of people believe that they have the right to bear arms in some respect.
I do.
Right, and I'm not even going to argue with that, but it seems to me that a lot of people misuse guns, and there's a lot of guns out there that are floating around in an illegal way and, are easily gettable by people that want to hurt people with them. I'd like to see you get involved in some sort of action that stops that.
Okay, well, what a great idea.
Okay, well, thanks.
I got an idea.
What?
Hey, Chuck, you shoot beer cans, right?
Yeah.
Your penance should be to stop drinking beer.
Oh, don't say that.
Just don't drink too much with
don't
the gun.
Don't drink any beer with the gun. That way you got no cans to shoot.
Gotcha.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck.
Thanks.
Yeah, beer and guns.
fun.
But the weird thing is like, I grew up, when my dad had guns, and he never used them for anything. He threatened to use them on himself.
Oh, God.
But he never. That's
so dark.
Yeah, really.
Don't do it or I'll do me. All right. No, he's okay. I'm just kidding. I love my dad. I'm in an honor your parents mode right now.
Uh-oh.
I love my parents. I accept them for everything they are. And all right, let's not get too far. I'm going to choke up. Hey, AJ in Kentucky, what do you have to confess, AJ?
Hey.
Bless me, brothers, for I have sinned.
Okay. Uh-oh. How long has it been since your last confession?
I don't know. This is the first time I heard this bit, to tell you the truth.
What's your sin, man?
Well, even though I don't support the energy bill in whole, I do think we should be drilling in Alaska. I don't see why we should be giving our money to a bunch of, forgive me, but...
Well, apparently...
Ooh, Arabs? Were you going to say Arabs?
No, I was going to see... I want to say, royal family. Why are we supporting a monarchy? I thought we were Americans, I want us to, I don't care. They can dig in my backyard. They can dig where the moose do the grown-up. I don't care, but we should, not pay any money.
Well, what happened to the idea of maybe looking for alternative energy resources than, constantly, banking on this limited resource that's already causing so much trouble in the world? And I understand what you're saying, but apparently some oil companies don't even think it's worth drilling up there. And a lot of people believe that in Alaska, this is just a ploy on behalf of the politicians to bring jobs in, temporary jobs in the drilling. And then once that's depleted, more jobs just for cleaning up. So I think your penance is going to have to be part of that cleanup crew.
Oh, I'd love that. But I got to tell you, if you're going to get off the pipe,
Yeah.
It's hard to get off the pipe.
No, I understand that, but I mean, why not, put a little research and energy into figuring out
how to... I'm not against that. They could spend some of that $8 billion they lost on, alternative research, but I got to say, we should drill, you know, where we think the oil is. And if you don't like it, stop driving your car.
I don't have a car.
He doesn't have a car.
I don't have a car.
I don't have a car. No, I don't.
No, no, neither does Mary.
I don't either.
Well, good for him.
There you go.
Let's not get into a fight.
Brian, is that you, Brian?
I think your penance is to go to Alaska and maybe move right next to where they're drilling and see how that goes.
Man, it's cold, man.
It's
penance
right.
is tough. Thanks for calling.
See, that he had to drink some bourbon or something. I don't know.
He's getting mad.
Yeah.
That's all right. Carol, no time. Got to go. That's right.
Oh,
that's
man.
Right. I was getting all into it. I got
Me
all worked
too.
Up with that. Sorry, Carol's going to have to wait till another time. I appreciate your calls. I hope we helped out. You know, but that's, I'm not going to get into it. Coming up, Johnny K Street's going to be with us on The Odds. We're going to talk a bit about, they exhumed Emmett Till's body. To reopen that case, and, you know, we had talked to somebody about that before. It's very interesting stuff. So all that is coming up next.
And, of course, we've also got the return of the Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Ah.
The Temple of Doom, next on Air America Radio.
Al Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh as a troubling...
Next message.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Everything is fair for the Republicans because they believe in nothing except power.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
And now, the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Marc Maron and the Temple of Doom.
In his last adventure, Private High Marc Maron was shot, went to heaven, was hired by God to find the Antichrist, and was brought back to life again. And that was just episode one.
I was finally out of the hospital and sewn up like Priscilla Owens' judicial nomination. My new assistant, Grace, was wheeling me out. Grace is tough, a real wiseacre, and a hot tomato on top of it. She's also gayer than a bridal shower at Rosie O'Donnell's house.
So when do we get back to work, Maron? I didn't take this job to play nursemaid. I was told I could kick some political hack ass. I've got a black belt that's getting wrinkled and a Glock that's itching to be self-actualized.
Just so happens I do have a job for you. I need you to make believe you're my wife.
You must have me confused with Meryl Streep, and I'm not sure she could even pull off this acting job. The day I marry a guy, Bill Frist will be giving Tom DeLay a stem cell transfusion at the end of a boob job.
Hey, I do those political film noir metaphors. It's your job to be the outrageous angry dyke stereotype. Now spackle those piercings and pack a bag. We're leaving tomorrow for the Holier Than Them Festival in Atlanta. It's a huge recruitment drive for the Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade. A 3-day festival of prayer, paranoia, and gay bashing. It's as good a place as any to start looking.
Looking for who?
The Antichrist.
The Antichrist? That's simple. Dick Cheney.
Hey, let's not jump ahead. It's only episode 2 here.
Welcome to the Holier Than Them Festival, folks. Is this your first visit to the Blood of the Heterosexual Christ megachurch?
Yep. We're just in from Abilene. My wife and I are celebrating our first anniversary, and we couldn't think of a better way to do it. Right, honey?
You know, honey is a demeaning word for women. It objectifies us as foodstuff and relegates us to the second sex role of mere consumption.
That's real funny, dear.
You think that's funny? How come you don't laugh at my Marga Gomez CDs?
Oh, you sound just like one of those liberal, feminist, dyke, Christ killers from New York City. We all like a good laugh around here. Matter of fact, Rush Limbaugh is going to do a little comedy deal for us tomorrow. I need to ask you both a few questions before you go through the metal detector. Are you bringing in any fruits or vegetables?
No.
Has your luggage been in your possession all day?
Yes.
Do you accept Jesus as your personal savior and forsake Satan, the Democratic Party, and HBO?
Even The Sopranos?
Oh, your little lady sure is a pistol.
Yes, she is, and she better stop shooting off her mouth.
Go on through the metal detector, please. Hold on, Mark, is it?
Yeah.
The detector didn't go off. Can you go through again?
But it didn't go off.
That's the problem. Where's your crucifix?
I had one, but a gay black guy stole it from me just before we left.
You know, that happens more often than you'd think. Just go over to that table and get yourself a house crucifix. Okay, Grace, is it? What a beautiful name. Step right through the detector. Hallelujah. Hold on. I don't see your crucifix.
Oh, I'm wearing it in a special place. He knows it's there.
Praise Jesus. Go right ahead, sister.
A crucifix?
It's one of my piercings. I put it where no man will ever see.
Sweet Jesus.
Praise his name, brother.
Are Mark and his new assistant Grace in danger now that they've penetrated the first level of the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade? Why was the person who registered them talking into his lapel as they walked away? And did anyone get the connection between Grace's piercing and the Exorcist? Well, now you have. Tune in next week when we hear Rush Limbaugh say, "Where can I score around here?" That's next week on Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. And tune in later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of the Mark and Mark Death Poetry Jam.
I call this Voices in My Head. I got voices in my head. I can't get rid of them. They tell me to do bad things, deadly things. I try to shut them off. I don't want to kill anybody. Then the voice stops for a day or two. I run a few errands, maybe get a slice. Hey, while I've got you here, be honest. Do you think I'm going bald? Thank you.
I call this piece, I Work With a Crazy White Guy. I work with a crazy white guy who hears voices in his head, and I think he's going to kill someone. Call the police immediately. I'm going to keep reading off this piece of paper like it's all part of the poem. But I'm serious. Call the cops. That's my poem. Thank you.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
39 past the hour. We got Johnny K Street's going to be here in a few minutes, Riley.
Yeah.
And if you want to see us in person tomorrow, we're going to be City Bakery right here in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9. We're going to have free coffee. There's plenty of pastries. We're going to give away some T-shirts, some this and that, some goodies, some swag. Mike Doty's going to play some guitar, sing some songs.
Yeah.
We're going to get some gossip with Paula Froelich from the New York Post. I've never talked to a gossip columnist.
Never
have.
Uh-oh.
But you know what's interesting? Let's get into this right now. A little while back, we had a guest on our show, Keith Beauchamp, who is, his documentary was essential. His documentary, The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till, was essential in reopening this case.
Yes.
And yesterday, they exhumed the body of Emmett Till.
They exhumed the body of Emmett Till, and they resurrected, if only for a short time, the horror of what happened to this young man back in 1955. And what they're doing is trying to test for DNA to find out if there's anyone still living who should be prosecuted in connection with this.
So the story is that he's a 14-year-old boy. He was brought up in Chicago. He was in Mississippi, and him and a group of kids were walking down the street, and he was accused by this group of white men for whistling at a white woman, and he was later kidnapped from his uncle's house, beaten, and thrown in the river. And this was a pivotal, mythic moment in the beginning of the sort of active rage of the civil rights
struggle.
Of
the civil rights movement. Yeah, it was a guy named Roy Bryan and his half-brother, J.W. Milam. They were the two people who were tried. They were acquitted in something like 2 hours, and one of the jurors joked and said, well, it would have been shorter, but we had to break for lunch.
I just can't. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. And this is an attempt to right an historic wrong. In that, by all accounts, if you believe what America says about itself, this should have been totally unnecessary. The people that killed Emmett Till would have either been brought to justice, certainly. They'd either been doing time, died in jail, or they would have been executed.
Well, we had when Keith Beauchamp was on, he explained why they need to exhume the body, which is being done. And let's hear a little bit from Keith Beauchamp, the documentary filmmaker who created the untold story of Emmett Lewis Till.
Autopsy was never performed on the body in 1955. And with any criminal investigation or criminal case that could possibly go back into court, you're going to need those records. You know, even if you go back and look at the Meg Evers case that was reopened,
mm-hmm.
and they had to go back and exhume his body.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they had to do that because they lost the autopsy report. So with any criminal investigation, any criminal case that could possibly go back to trial, this will be used as evidence for the jury. They have to review it.
That was Keith Beauchamp last month on our show. There's also another reason why he said the body needs to be exhumed.
What's been hovering over this case for so many years was that the prosecution could not prove that the body was, in fact, Emmett Till.
Yes.
We know it was Emmett Till, but that's what's been hovering over the case for so long. So we want to lay everything to rest once and for all to show that it's, in fact, Emmett Till, as well as we believe that there's forensic evidence that is there that could link others who were involved with the murder.
Again, that was Keith Beauchamp last month. He's the documentary filmmaker who made The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till, which will be shown at the Film Forum in New York in August on the 50th anniversary of the Emmett Till murder. Now, Riley, apparently what he's saying is that there was no autopsy.
That in and of itself is something to contemplate. In a murder case, a clear case of homicide,
yes,
no autopsy was performed.
And apparently there are records missing, but there is DNA evidence that can be linked up with evidence that they will get from the body, the exhumed body of Emmett Till, that could link some people that are still alive and possibly part of the murder that took place in 1955.
Yeah, and even if all the people involved in this are dead, the fact is they need to be exposed. If the evidence is there, whether they're living or whether they're dead, the conspiracy behind the murder of Emmett Till needs to be exposed, if for history's sake alone.
Yeah, so that, you know, at least to get some closure and to show that there might be, you know, even if it takes 45 years, 50 years to get a little bit of justice, you know, that would be important. It would be important to a lot of people.
Well, it would show that America is not now as hypocritical as it was in 1955. Remember, our Constitution has not changed since 1955, but in 1955, people thought it was perfectly normal for a 15-year-old black kid to be murdered and two white guys to be acquitted by an all-white jury. They thought that was justice.
Unbelievable. It's just, I can't even imagine what it must have been like to live in that time.
It was a scary, I mean, even into the 60s, Mark, this was something that black people lived with all the time, whether, by the way, in the South or in the North. The lynching of Emmett Till certainly took place in a southern state, but there were many, many people across the country that shared the same sentiment as the people who killed him.
Oh, well, that sentiment still exists. It exists, you know, in the deep, not-so-deep unconscious and conscious of some factions of the Christian right in this country. There is definitely a racial undertone. There's a legacy of the Klan. There's a legacy of Reconstruction that runs through some factions of people, you know, that are very organized and very much part of the political fabric of the right now.
Well, of course. And during the period of the worst black oppression, Christians developed a rationale for it within their own religion.
Mm.
Think about that.
Well, you know, when we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit and have Johnny K Street in here to give us some odds. There's also a story about, there's a new study revealing the role that slaves played in the building of the Capitol building. And the White House, which is also on the radar here. So stay with us.
Now, I may have some strange religious views, because I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews.
Next message.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil.
In 3 hours or less.
Air America Radio.
Support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
Fifty past the hour, Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Tomorrow we're going to be at the City Bakery here in Manhattan. That's on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues, doing the show live. But if you want to come down and see us, touch us, feel the love of Mark and Mark in the morning, come on down. We'll give you a mug.
Touch him. Don't touch me.
No, you can touch him. You can touch Riley. I don't care what he says. We'll give you a keychain, maybe a shirt or something if you come early. Free coffee, plenty of pastries. Mike Doty's going to be playing some guitar and singing some songs. We'll have Paula Froelich from the New York Post to dish some dirt and teach me how to be it. Apparently she's got a book that'll teach me how to be it.
It?
Yeah, you know, the it person. The it guy.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Also, I think I definitely got to sell my house because houses are sliding down hills in California. The guy, I'm not going to talk about my neighborhood because it's a great neighborhood, and I might be selling my house next month. But anyways, there's lots of big news stories out there. I'll talk about the mudslides in a minute or two. But let's get some bets down on the big news with our Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby.
All right.
I got deep throat action, or as I like to call it, that rat from the FBI.
Whoa, so you have a problem with deep throat?
Let's put it this way, Mark. If you're going to rat somebody out, at least have a reason, all right?
Yeah, okay.
Maybe the feds got something on you. You're looking at a hard time. They're squeezing your family. But to give somebody up just to give somebody up, that's inexcusable.
Oh, come on.
As Shakespeare once said, Mark, a rat is a rat is a rat.
Mm.
You can dress a rat up in pig's clothing, but you can't get him to drink. Am I wrong?
Something like that, I guess, and that's one way to look at it.
All right, here we go.
All right.
50 to 1.
Yeah.
Deep Throat is also going to reveal we never went to the moon. Television is just a way for the government to spy on people. And Nixon was having an affair with a young, very hot Liza Minnelli.
Oh, come on, man.
But remember, the guy's 91. My grandfather lived to be 95. The last 5 years of his life, he thought he was a Cocker Spaniel. We had to give him all his meals in a bowl with his name on it.
Johnny.
So, word to the wise.
Johnny, you got to have some action on that Downing Street memo, right?
This is my favorite long shot in months. You ready? Get your money.
All right, I got
1,001.
Okay.
1,001, the Downing Street memo will ever affect George Bush. Get your money down.
All right, I got it.
Nothing touches this guy. He could dive into the ocean without getting wet. And I'll tell you what, if Newsweek puts the Downing Street memo on their cover, I'll double your money, baby.
You'll see
a picture of Paris Hilton getting the Pulitzer on the cover of Newsweek before that happens.
All right, I'm in.
I've been to England, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of action there.
Yeah.
You know, they say the English are uptight, stuffy, but, you know, look at Prince Charles. He marries a guy in drag, and no one gets uptight about it.
Come on.
What?
You mean Camilla Parker Bowles? She's a woman, Johnny.
Ouch! Now I owe my brother-in-law a C-note.
Hey, Johnny, what else are we looking at? I just got paid. Give me something good.
I got a nice little bet for you, all right? Last minute. I just started taking action on this. Al Sharpton is going to sit in on the Rush Limbaugh show, right?
Yeah.
And host segments of his own. 20-1 within a week, Al Sharpton bitch slaps Rush Limbaugh so hard he has to go back on OxyContin for the pain.
I put 100 on that.
Yep.
All right, Johnny, thanks.
Thanks, everybody. I got to get to court.
Oh, again? Johnny. You live there. Oh, my God. They got a cop for you down there? All right, that's Johnny K Street. Hey, you guys, if you want a podcast, Morning's Edition, you can go to morningsedition.com for details on that. A lot of people are doing that. I'm so close to getting a damn iPod.
My God.
As I was sitting there, I can't. What do you mean? What am I talking about? Yesterday, I saw someone with an iPod, and I'm thinking, like, why not just get the 20 gig one, and then that's 1,500 songs. So how many songs do I really need? I just want it for when I ride my bike down to the track to run my sad butt around the track. And this was all going on the same time. I'm looking at that show about bourbon, thinking about, you know, how healthy bourbon is.
Yeah.
Ridiculous day. I just wanted to go spend money on something. Maybe a new house. And now, see, now you got your house up for sale.
Oh, no, don't tell anybody that.
Okay, you don't have it up for sale.
Thank you.
Yeah. I must be talking about me.
You want to sell your house?
Well, I got that house out there in California. It's a small house.
Okay.
It's a nice little place.
How many bedrooms?
It's a two-bedroom house. It's a nice chunk
of
land.
How many baths?
It's got one bathroom.
Two-bedroom, one bath?
Yeah, with a living room, and it's got a front yard. We got a deck. There's a deck, and I got a little bit of land and a lower patio, and my garage is an office. Very nice, but it's on a hill. and judging by what's going on in Laguna Beach. But, you know, apparently, as I've said before, you know, people who buy houses in Southern California, they're going in for the risk. They're like, they're defying God.
Californians do this. They do this all over the state, Mark. It's unbelievable.
Like 20 houses damaged. One slides down the hill.
Yeah, one slides down the hill. People think their toilet's exploding, and actually it was.
Could you imagine how horrible that is? That sound of
it. Spitting on it, yeah.
Oh, my God. You ever been in an earthquake, dude?
No.
Oh, my God.
Only a little tremor once when I was coming home from a party, and I thought I was...
I was in that big one. What was it?
Oh, Northridge?
Yeah. I was in a hotel. I was in the St. James Hotel on some sort of junket for a Comedy Central show I was doing, And it was like 4:30 in the morning, and all you hear is like clinking, like the rattling of things on the wall.
Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you hear the sound, the literal sound of the plates of the earth shifting. And then you hear the building starting to creak. It sounds like some sort of weird experimental music. And there's that moment you're like, oh, my God, what do I, and I'm on the eighth floor, and do you run down with no clothes on? Do you put your pants on? You know, what do you do? And then it went on for like 45 seconds. And then, of course, you have that moment. It's like, nah, I'm just going to go back to bed. But you can't. You got to go out. You know?
Yeah, you do have to go out. You have to evacuate. Does it make you believe in God, Mark Maron?
No, it didn't. But, you know, ironic story is that I'm standing out in front of this place, and there was a guy standing next to me who happened to be one of the producers of the Beavis and Butthead show. Right? And we are looking at the blackened hills of Hollywood. I mean, everything is black. There's no light anywhere. You just see, you know, power stations exploding in the distance.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And people are just frightened and weird. We're all clustered together. And this guy who produced Beavis and Butthead actually looks at me and goes, I can't help but think this is somehow my fault for unleashing Beavis and Butthead on the world. And he was somehow responsible. And I'm like, I thought, like, how many dozens of people must have been standing around Hollywood saying that exact same thing to themselves?
Yeah, right.
But it was pretty fascinating. I mean, thank God I put my pants on, you know, because I would have been the only one standing out there in my underwear, and that would have been sad.
But now that was an earthquake. How? I wonder what warning, other than just hearing the pipes, you know, make these odd noises. What happens in a mudslide? It's not like an earthquake.
Well, usually if you start, you know, if all of a sudden things become at an angle, like all of a sudden if you start tilting and having to run up the hill of your kitchen, then I think that's an indication that there's a problem.
That could be it, yeah.
We got Russell Simmons coming up.
Russell Simmons, hip-hop mogul, social activist.
Yep, and we're going to also talk about the slaves that built the Capitol and the White House getting their due.
Well, they're not getting paid.
That's true.
But they will be recognized next here on Air.
Six past the hour. It's Mark Maron with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition.
Yes, it is.
On Air America Radio. Hey, you guys, you gals, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, cat lovers, all of you who live in New York City, if any of you have a dream to come see Mark Riley and myself.
I have a dream.
Live. Come to City Bakery tomorrow morning. We'll be broadcasting live from City Bakery in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll have some free coffee for you, pastries. Maybe we'll give away some stuff, swag, things.
Swag, but don't touch me. Touch Maron.
All right, you can touch me. And I bet you if you come up and touch Riley, you won't mind.
I'll shake hands. Now, I'm not Donald Trump or nothing. But yeah. I mean, you know, like, don't just walk up and try and, you know, pet me. Or
still very important, though.
I'm no emu.
Of course not. That would be me. I'm an emu. An emu. Out of all the animals in the world, Riley's like, given a choice, I would not be an emu.
Emu, that's right.
Isn't that a bird? It's like this weird-looking bird.
Yeah.
It's like a kiwi or something, right?
Well, yeah, kind of like an ostrich without the neck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sort of.
And apparently you're not one.
I am not one.
Not an emu. You're not an ostrich either.
They're not up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Chris has got a picture of the emu. Thank you. Thank God for the internet. Isn't it amazing that they're just...
There it is.
You're definitely
the eyes.
There.
The eyes.
But the hair is kind of...
Yeah, I know.
Anyways... No. It's amazing, isn't it, with the internet that now, without even missing a beat, it's like emu. Not only do I know what it is, but here's a picture.
Yeah.
Right here. And soon you'll be able to do that on your iPod or on your phone. Bill Gates says it's going to be all in the phone eventually. Why am I talking about that? Mike Doty, tomorrow morning, will be playing guitar and singing with us. Also, we have Paula Froelich, who is going to come and talk about some stuff. Jerry Springer's right in the next room. Can you see him? Is he there?
Yeah, he's there.
Is he just sitting there?
He's rocking back and forth. I think he's concentrating.
Okay, let's not bother him. Maybe we can pull him in here and chat with him a minute. He's doing a show from New York for this week.
Yeah.
Russell Simmons is going to be on board here in just a few minutes. If you want to see me this weekend in a low-profile gig, I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club.
I thought you were going to say the low-price gig.
It is. It's reasonably priced. Like, there's any big-profile Mark Maron gig. I will be playing Madison Square Garden this weekend for one night only.
Mark, what's wrong with that?
because it'd be sad. It'd just be me and seven people. You know what I mean? Like, hey, how's everybody doing? And of course, the guy with the mop. What's going on? I thought it was closed tonight. Anyways.
You got to pay the ushers no matter how many people show.
I just became Don Rickles again. Hello, what's going on? I thought we were closed. All right. What does that mean? www.gothamcomedyclub.com for info. If you want a podcast, you can go to morningsedition.com.
You need an iPod for that, though.
Oh, the iPod thing. I'm going to get one. I got to stop this. This is stupid. Either I'm going to get the iRiver or the iPod or whatever. But you know what? Now that I'm exercising again, I've decided I want to do it. And I ran into a guy in the elevator, and he had the 1500, the 20 gig.
Mm-hmm.
Who had the 20 gig? Someone else did. I said, is that all I need? He goes, I got two. I got a big one, too. I got
two?
40, he's got 40 gig and a 20 gig.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, John Sinton's assistant.
That's the guy!
Yeah, he has three, actually.
John Sinton is, what is his title? He's the head of things.
Head of things. Director of stuff.
Yeah, director of stuff here at Air America. He's one of the presidents, of the many presidents.
He must pay nicely, because he has three iPods.
I thought he bought one. Yeah, that's the problem. Why am I listening to that guy? Not only does he has a million songs that he carries with him at all times, he's got three iPods. You know he can't have that much music. I don't know if I want to become a pod zombie. I don't know if I want to. But he was telling me, oh, you can do all kinds of stuff. You can actually download your thoughts from yesterday and listen to what you were thinking yesterday. And I'm like, wow, they've really come a long way with that. But I'm going to get one. Anyways.
Oh, Lord.
Sometimes it's hard to read the headlines. So, you know, we got this machine here that's been warming up. That's why I've been chewing the fat. All right, we got the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator, so I'm going to crank it up and feed it some headlines. So here we go. By the way, I heard a rumor that Brendan P.W. McDonald is going to perform the intro live tomorrow.
What?
Yeah.
Impossible. Really?
I can't wait.
I'll be waiting for that.
Let's feed this thing some headlines because it's a machine. You know, it's a machine that makes this noise. All right, from the New York Times, from the New York Times. From stem cell opponents, an embryo crusade.
That sounds like a poetry.
From stem cell opponents, an embryo crusade. When you have... All right, here we go. From stem cell opponents, an embryo... What'd they put in the coffee? Translation. Crusading embryos vow to retake Jerusalem as soon as they grow hands. Hands. All right, here we go. Enough of this, man. There's important stuff going on, okay? There are people dying.
Yes.
All right, Jeb Bush scoffs at presidential inquiries.
I used to love the fat guy.
Wrong button. Jeb Bush scoffs at presidential inquiries. There we go. Jeb Bush scoffs at presidential inquiries. Jeb says he'll wait for a Democrat to clean things up for 4 years first. That's all right. All right, wait, I think there's another one. How about this? How about Jeb says he doesn't want his brother's Iraqi hand-me-downs.
Wow.
All right. UK couple marks 80th wedding anniversary. That's from the Associated Press. A strange headline.
Uh-oh.
UK couple marks 80th wedding anniversary. Okay. The translation is couple claims they just stay together for the sake of the great-great-grandkids.
Oh.
That wasn't a big closer, was it?
No, you got the closer.
Live. Tomorrow. Tomorrow, that's going to be live.
Yeah.
Are you also going to bring the iNews down there?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we got to have the machine down there, too.
I mean, you got to be gentle.
Come on, yeah, we're going to bring the machine down, and the Cardinal, hopefully, if he can take a break from the church, will be down there. Cardinal Milfington is going to be there.
Cardinal Milfington is taking time out from his busy Catholic schedule.
Dig this story. Yes, a busy Catholic schedule. The Milf man will be there. Here we listen to this story, right? This is nuts. Scientists have found the chemical equivalent of, this is nuts. Okay, apparently they've isolated a hormone, okay, that will make you more prone to trust. Why do my peas flatulate? Have you noticed that I do that? Like, prone. All right. Why? They found a hormone. I notice it all the time. Hey, now. All right. Here we go. That if you inhale this hormone that they've isolated, that you're going to trust people more. Exactly, exactly. Like, let me just read this right out of the copy. I'm not going to screw around. Volunteers in a study were told they were participating in a decision-making experiment. Those who inhaled the hormone, which occurs naturally in the brain, were more likely to entrust others with large sums of money than were volunteers who inhaled no hormone. Now, of course, the people that ran this experiment, gone. No one knows what happened to them. They left with, like, $40,000. Of the. I'm not going to fall for that twice. You know what I mean? So beware if someone comes up to you at a mall and says, hey, we're running an experiment. We got this hormone spray. But they do have one. The experiment involved, like, 128 participants. It was conducted by scientists at the University of Zurich and many other academic centers. This is one of those things where it just scares the hell out of me, Riley, that they have this stuff, they've isolated it, and you can just, what if they just put it into a vent at a political rally?
It sounds like one of those things that one of those villains in Batman would do.
I know,
put
exactly.
Put in a ventilation system. But you know what? Hmm. They did this experiment, and when it came to substituting computers for people, in other words, they would trust a human being with a large sum of money. Hmm. But when it came time to try and substitute that banker with a computer, the hormone had no effect.
Oh, really?
It had to be a person-to-person interaction.
Well, that's interesting. And
you got any money?
Yeah, well, here, hold on. I have some of the hormone.
Oh, wait a minute. Here.
Give me your wallet.
Here.
Thanks, Ryan.
Here.
God, that's
here. How much you need?
It really works.
Yay.
Wow.
Want my card?
We got Russell Simmons next, Air America Radio.
I'm trying to form a song here, and I can't have the phone people or whoever's in charge of punching my buttons. You know, needs to get some cancer, you know, needs to find their own disease in their own mind, you know, and how happy they really are with their life and how content they are and how they're going to look to the sky when they die, you know, or are they going to be in hell? I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now, how's that going to look in the deposition?
Next message.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
1483. That's 1-800-243-1483. Call Stop Sign right now. 1-800-243-1483.
Past the hour, Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. In a few minutes, we're going to have Russell Simmons with us. But right now, in the other room, right here in our very own studio, Jerry Springer, how are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty good? No? Huh?
He's not there.
He's not listening.
You think he can't hear us?
Can you hear us, Jerry?
Yeah.
I am fine. You guys outed me.
What are you talking about?
You outed me.
In terms
you're gay?
No.
I
don't
know.
I am.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So how did we ask you, Jerry? We told people you were in New York?
Ah, yeah, I think you're having trouble hearing us.
I'm here rocking.
Uh-oh.
I'm going over my notes for the show.
Uh-huh.
And,
Oh, wait a minute. You know what? He's hearing something else in his head, aren't you?
I believe he has a little bit of a delay.
I'm going
over my notes here, and all of a sudden I hear, because I'm listening to your guys' show while I'm doing this.
Yeah?
Yeah? Uh-oh. Yes, we're in some kind of delay.
He's lost in space. You know what I mean?
Wait a minute. He's coming in here.
Oh, he's going to come in?
He's coming in here, ladies and gentlemen.
Here's the...
Please, don't get up. Okay, please, don't get up. Can you hear me now?
Wait a minute. He stole your line. Wait a minute. Now we got it. Now you got it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. How you doing, man?
That's great.
This is a powerful radio.
You're right.
It doesn't even
room.
Go from one room to another.
Other. Yeah.
How many people you think are listening if we can't even broadcast to the next room?
And there's some sort of tape delay between rooms. How is
there
that
was.
Possible?
There
what
was.
Are you working on there? You got a big show planned?
I understand. Someone told me that they found out who Deep Throat is.
No.
You're right on the pulse, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's good.
I think Bush is going to beat Kerry. You watch.
Apparently the delay is not just in the room.
Yeah, there you go.
They send me the information so much later. Plus these briefing sheets, the words are so big.
Uh-oh.
What am I supposed to do?
Nothing, so you guys did
out me, because here's what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I'm listening to you, you know, because I don't want to miss a big story.
There you go.
And And I get a call from, and I hear that you say I'm rocking back and forth as I'm studying.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Yeah. You know, that's what I do.
Apparently, the mild autism has done very well for you. You know,
No, it's the guy, the pitching coach for the Atlanta Braves, does it say? Leo Mazzone.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Did you really know that, Jerry?
Yeah,
I'm a huge baseball
fan. I got three words for you, though. Kansas City Royals.
You're hurtful. you are hurtful.
I can't help it.
Yeah. Well, I grew up, I grew up here in New York, and I worship the New York. I still wear pinstripe pajamas.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Used to?
I still do that.
So you're here till when?
I'm going to be here all week. I'm here all week. And
the weekend's tomorrow.
Right.
You're gone after tomorrow, Jerry?
I'm gone after tomorrow. But actually, leaving you, I'm starting to well up a little bit thinking about that. But I'm not going to be seeing you guys.
Yeah, us too.
Yeah.
Is he coming
but I see you guys now, and you know what?
What?
I understand why the three of us are on radio.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. But hey, can you call my wife and ask her to buy his next pay-per-view, please?
Sure.
Yeah, whatever it is, like she has it already.
Yeah,
right. Actually, she's on Thursday's show.
But hey,
not.
What show?
Do not.
Oh, thanks for stopping
in, thanks, guys.
And we'll watch you study from here.
Yeah. You know, it's really exciting.
Send you back to the other room.
Pay-per-view, Jerry studying. Here he is, Jerry rocking.
Put it up on the website.
Man rocking.
There you go.
Thanks, Jerry. Have a good show.
Have a good show, Jerry.
Oh, man. That was weird that he was just in the other room, and then he couldn't hear, and then he came in this room, and then he couldn't hear me, and then he could hear him. Wow, it's amazing, isn't it? If I had an iPod, none of that would have happened.
Well,
everything
would have
went smoothly.
Chris Lopresto hooked it up because he must have, like, four hands as fast as he switched these mics around.
Not fast enough, though.
Yeah. Sorry about that, guys. It's okay. It's going to be all right. We've just said nice things about you, Chris. You should say, I'm amazing. How about that?
Yes, I'm amazing, and thank you very much for the compliment.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, much better. So let's get into this story, Riley. Apparently, they've known this before, but how come it's just coming to light today that the U.S. Capitol was built with the labor of slaves who did most of the work in terms of cutting logs, laying the stones, baking the bricks? I mean, this is two centuries later, and now Congress all of a sudden has decided the world should know about it. Dig this. Local farmers rented out their slaves for an average of $55 a year to help build the Capitol, the White House, the Treasury Department, and the streets laid out by city planner Pierre L'Enfant.
Now,
the weird thing is that $55 a year in today's dollars is actually in some neighborhoods in D.C. what people make today.
Well, yeah, and it would be actually the government would not be able to pay anyone if they had to pay the descendants of these slaves off for the labor that they got for free.
Right.
You know.
Now, why do you think that they're just this is just you know, all of a sudden they decide to bring this to light today?
Well, you know, Congress has a habit every now and then of just digging up stuff when they don't have anything else to do, like, you know, dealing with Social Security. Or perhaps trying to end the war in Iraq. So now what they do, and this is the part I love about elected officials, you know, you could just say, look, I'm sorry, this is the dimensions of it, whatever. Instead, they appoint a task force to study the issue. Right? Now, it's
like
done.
Not bigger things
this is from 1790. You don't have to study it. They did it. They oppressed black people and made them build the capital of the United States.
And here's another thing that they'll probably blame on those slaves is that there are no handicap ramps, apparently, at the Capitol.
Well, there were no handicapped slaves. They didn't allow them to do the building. I don't know.
But no, I'm surprised that they don't blame somebody because apparently people with disabilities have no way of evacuating the Capitol building in an efficient fashion. And in the book it says, like, during an emergency, wait at the door, will come get you.
Yeah, that'll be William Rehnquist won't be going to the Capitol Medical Building, I don't think. Remember, he was pushed in there. In a wheelchair.
Rolled through.
Arlen Specter, I believe, has been in a wheelchair recently. If Max Cleland was still in the Senate, which he should be, he was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
He was a quadriplegic. What would they line him up? At the bottom of a staircase or something?
No, I think they have an elevator there, but I just think it's
be pretty crowded.
Well, yeah, I don't know how many handicapped members of Congress there are, but it's interesting to me that the Capitol itself does not have a designated plan for handicapped people. And handicapped, mind you, is pretty broad. People with, here's how they classify it. People with disabilities are commonly left out of preparedness and planning activities, according to an April 15th report released by the NCD. The report term, people with disabilities, does not simply those, oh God, I can't get through this. It's people with heart disease, emotional psychiatric conditions, arthritis, significant allergies, asthma, multiple chemical sensitivities. That wouldn't that cover everybody in Congress?
Just about.
Exactly. So they're all handicapped. So now none of them can get out?
Have to wait in line.
All right.
Or wait for the elevator.
Russell Simmons next.
Air America Radio.
Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Sure, the ammunition dumps. It just goes on and on.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Right now, we are going to talk to, on the phone, the chairman of the Hip Hop Summit Action Network, the co-founder of Def Jam Records. He's also now on the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March. We have the Million More Movement, which is going to have a march as well. Russell Simmons, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you. So tell us a little bit about the new march, the Million More March.
Well, there are 150 co-conveners,
mm-hmm.
and including the Hip Hop Summit Action Network, which I am the chair,
mm-hmm.
chairman of, and the NAACP, and Urban League, and Shop, and Jackson, you know, Likely Candidates, Harry Belafonte, and Rosa Parks, and Coretta Scott King, Dorothy Heights, and many others. And we're coming together. The march was called for by Minister Louis Farrakhan, as were the last two marches, the Million Man March and the Million Family March. And the idea is self-love, personal responsibility, and fighting poverty and ignorance. So the idea is to go together. And I don't know if you saw, they were both televised, the Million Family March, which was the most 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that march was I was responsible for getting a lot of the hip-hop artists that supported Will Smith and Puffy and on, lots of Jay-Z, Serena Williams, these guys. And anyway, also I was responsible for getting the Jewish community to join us. And I, there was a set of black Jews, one that they live in Dimona, and there were there's this other Hasidic set of Jews, about 10,000 of them. But that was what my job was. I went out and I had to reach out for young people,
yeah.
and some of the members of the Jewish community. I wanted it to be. The idea of the Million Family March was to burn all the flags. That was the idea. You know, what would it be like if there were
no nations, no boundaries?
Religious idea that separated us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what the speech was. And the speech was that an aspiring yogi, the person who doesn't have much faith in organized religion or organized kind of, you know, things that separate people. Sometimes organized religions don't work to free people as much as they work to bind people.
Mm-hmm.
But the ideas of all the prophets being one, that's what the speech was about, and that's what the ideas in the march were about. I thought it was very uplifting.
Russell Simmons, tell us what you saw coming out of the first Million Man March in 1995. What positive benefits came directly from that gathering?
Well, you could ask, many African-Americans would tell you that that was a day that turned their lives around. But by concrete results, you can see that there was a huge rise in all the social and political programs that were about upliftment for community. People joined loads of people in all of these different organizations, felt a huge input the day after that march. And that was very, very positive. That's something you could quantify. Also, there's a huge drop off in black-on-black crime, and there were lots of benefits, but these are two obvious things that you could measure.
It was
a day that people went together to take personal responsibility, which is, you know, kind of a theme of the Hip Hop Summit anyway, taking back responsibility. So for me, it was a very inspiring day. For many, many African Americans, it was inspiring. The Million Family March, which they thought, I read in the media, it wasn't a success, but I stood on the stage and I saw what equaled about 10 baseball stadiums, 500,000 people, which means that the second march, which they said was not a success, and
it had more people than the 63 Civil Rights March. So that was a pretty successful march in my estimation. And the speech about love and about burning flags, and there were all these beautiful lit up signs.
Yeah,
there was a sign of the Muslim crest and star, the cross, and there was the Jewish star, and there were all these images, and they were all lit up. And the idea was to burn them all. Like I said, it was one of the most inspiring speeches.
Hey,
and that was another, you know, for many people, very inspiring day that people took the time to take off work, take responsibility, show up, and talk about the idea of love and personal upliftment.
Hey, Russell Simmons, now there's a lot of controversy surrounding this Millions More March with, beginning with, Anti-Defamation League Abraham Foxman, who is, claiming that your alignment with Farrakhan, who he sees and has, a relatively self-proclaimed anti-Semite, is a very negative thing. How do you respond to that?
Self-proclaimed anti-Semite?
Well, I think in his language.
I'm also the chairman of the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with Rabbi Snyder, who's the president.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we work very closely, very diligently on is black-Jewish relations.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm very concerned about. So I've tried over the years to set up meetings.
Right.
In fact, I had a meeting with the World Jewish Congress, which Alon Steinberg and Israel Singer was supposed to attend, as well as the Rabbi Snyder. Cornel West came, Martin Luther King III came.
Right.
And the minister came. They had a very good meeting. They talked about, the Torah a lot, because that's what they had in common.
Sure.
They spoke for a long time about that, and they went about their business, and there was no more meetings. But that was a meeting that, after 20 years, was well worth it, I thought. And I thought they should continue that dialogue, because I'm a firm believer that dialogue is critical.
Absolutely.
There's never been any blood in 75 years of the Nation of Islam and synagogues, anything, any violence.
Right.
There's no blood between these communities.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, there are also millions of African-American Muslims, including Wallace Dean Muhammad, who also came from Elijah Muhammad, and who's, very closely aligned with Farrakhan. And Farrakhan, as you know, trained Muhammad Ali. You may not know. But the point is, he's been around a very long time. He's got millions of followers. And if he says that we're all children of Abraham and that no true Muslim can hate a Jew, that is impossible if you are really practicing the Muslim faith, and that the idea of it's called the jihad. If the jihad is only in the heart, and it's not about violence, about personal struggle, if he believes that, promotes that on a regular basis, and of course his believers, someone said they're like Moonies, they love him so much, and a lot of the other African Americans in the community respect him so much, his words are golden to them. And if he says those words on a regular basis, those are the words we want to put in the forefront, not words from 20 years ago. And for me, the idea of bringing these people together for dialogue so they can see if there's common ground and, in fact, a basis to promote. He is also the secretary of the World Islamic Congress.
Right, so you say his language over the years has changed. Right.
I don't believe you tell people, I'm never going to talk to you.
Right.
I'm going to demonize you in front of your followers.
Right.
What your followers do, they become angry.
Right.
They may not have the spiritual kind of grounding that Farrakhan has, and then they become anti-Semites. So what we want to do is bring people together to promote positive ideas that we agree on. We agree that all of us love God, and all of us see each other as God. Well,
right.
Certainly that's the rap that Farrakhan has.
Right.
But that's the rap. Let's have that rap in the forefront. That way the millions of followers don't have to feel demonized when you demonize the man.
Right.
So the idea of icon burning, I stood up for Eminem. I got a lot of trouble from a lot of black women in Congress. They all came to my office pissed off. But I said, listen, the guy said he had a black girlfriend. He had a problem. He wrote a terrible song 12 years ago. Give him a break. I knew personally that he had donated anonymous money to organizations that help African-American women. So he's got a foul mouth. He was a kid, still a kid in my estimation, nice kid. So I stood up for him because I don't want the millions of kids in trailer parks to think, this is how you think about the African-American community, when in fact Eminem lives in and works with and has a, he's coming from a trailer park. He leads tons of kids into the kind of tolerance that he lives.
So you're saying that Farrakhan's language has changed, so the language and dialogue must be open in relation to the fact that he's evolved.
I was going to convene meetings, and we've been talking about this a lot, at the Holocaust Museum, not only for black Muslims and Jews, but for religious groups, but Muslims and Jews in America have to come together. In fact, that's the Farrakhan's rap. He says Elijah said that Muslims and Jews in America will be closely aligned in the future. That's his rap. He died a long time ago. They believe he's like guy floated from heaven. That's Elijah. And now, let me tell you a quick story about how much these people love him.
Uh-huh.
There's a guy who works at my door named Brother Leo. Now, I have a very funny office. My office is full of Jews. I got black Muslims. I got Hindus. I got a very diverse group of people.
Yeah.
But anyway, Brother Leo's our favorite employee. He stands there like a soldier at all times.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, I'm going to meet the minister to talk about the march. You can come with me. He gets all excited, right? He's got his bow tie on. He comes to me. He goes, oh, my God, he tells Simone, you know, at the front door, I'm going to meet the Holy Apostle. I'm like, are we going to the Holy Apostle?
Yeah.
You know, and now I got a great love and respect for Farrakhan. I never referred to him as the Holy Apostle. Get to the room. I said, Brother, would you please take a moment to meet one of your followers? The guy's been in the Nation of Islam since he was a child, 47 years old. He wants to come in and just, you know, say hello. Would you do that? He said, I'd love to do it. Guy comes in, starts crying like a baby. Big security guy. Guy, we depend our whole life on this guy. He's supposed to defend us in case the gangster rapper comes in. Then he's crying like a baby, Brother Leo. Now, you want him, Brother Leo, to do what he does in our front door, because he's constantly seeing rabbis, and all he does is say, God bless you. And Reverend Run comes in, we always laugh at Brother Leo. What are you thinking about? God.
Yeah.
That's all he ever says. He's thinking about God. We want that in our community. We want them to secure our projects again. They've been, the damage that was done between the fight between the black Muslims and the Jews in America, so deep. They've used to secure, there's a project in Harlem, I'm going to tell this story even though they would ask me not to, that was cleaned up in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
I think he got a housing, HUD gave him a contract.
Right.
So I said, that's amazing. It's a big story. Amsterdam News is going to run it. I said, don't run it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to run it because they're afraid they might lose their job. They clean up our projects. When we had gang fights, they stop our gang fights. And today they're saying, and even they, you know, they're saying we were misunderstood. Well, God, let it go. If you're saying that jihad's in the heart, and you're a vice president of the World Islamic Congress, and you're the most modern, and after 9/11, you and Ali and the other guy, Wallace Dean, stand up and talk about love and how it was not a Muslim, not in his heart, and it's wrong, and say all of these positive things and reach out to the Jewish community for 20 years to try to heal a rift. I think it's up to us to put them in a room together.
Yeah.
And promote. So anyway, that's the point. And the march, I believe, right. First of all, you're never going to separate any of us from him when it comes to the march.
Sure. And that's so October 14th.
Start a dialogue. And that's what I recommend. And I don't want to talk about Fox anymore because he has not met an African-American. He hasn't referred to as an anti-Semite. The
right.
only one he can say is not anti-Semite. I think today he's still saying I'm not, maybe not.
I
have a whole huge anti-Semitism campaign, and I'm always willing to, I mean, I've lived and grown up in the Jewish community.
So, hey, Russell, so the weekend of October 14th and 16th is the allotted weekend for the march?
Yeah.
And millionsmoremovement.com is the website people can go for information?
Yeah.
I really appreciate you being here, Russell Simmons. Great talking to you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
okay,
Russell.
You take care. We will come back. We've got, we're going to talk, well, you know, we've got the Cliff Notes coming back, and I think we have to reflect a little bit on our conversation here. That's coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition, on the air, and online, morningtradition.com, Air America Radio.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now, 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Yeah, 51 past the hour. We're going to land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Mark and Mark in the morning, my friends. Morning
yeah.
Sedition. The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition. Don't be stupid. If you have a dream to come down and see Mark Riley and I do this live if you have that dream in your heart, come to City Bakery tomorrow morning. We will be broadcasting live from 6 to 9 in the morning at 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue. City Bakery has lovely pastries.
Lovely pastries.
Yes, and there's going to be free coffee and goodie bags and maybe a T-shirt or two.
Good coffee.
Cardinal Milfington's coming down. Lawton Smalls will be there. Brendan P.W. McDonald will be doing this live. Very, this is exciting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Now, look, we just talked to Russell Simmons. I know some of you may be just tuning in, but we got to back talk a little bit. What was going on with that?
All I know is the filibuster wasn't just for Congress anymore.
I know. I couldn't get a word in. And neither one of us could. He's definitely a nice guy. But it's an interesting question in my mind is, well, first let's take this call. Brian in New Hampshire. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, Brian.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick point. In the major media, they just dismiss Reverend Farrakhan as being a divisive leader, and he's always trying to divide this group against that group. But during, if you remember the October 95 Million Man March, if you look at the New York crime rate statistics, they from late 1995 onward, they dropped off markedly after that Million Man March, and around the country in urban centers, the crime rates dropped noticeably after that Million Man March, and it went on for years. And this was something in New York, Giuliani was always trying to take credit for. And the man, that was something positive, I think, in American history and in American, how the races get along. I think that was a good thing when you look at the long term.
Okay. Well,
Brian's right.
Thanks for your call, Brian.
No, the crime rate did drop in New York and in other major cities across the country. And quite frankly, the Million Man March probably didn't get a lot of credit. I feel vindicated because I was saying that in the years after the Million Man March, when I was doing my own talk show on LIB. So, what he's saying comes as no particular surprise, and the numbers do back him up. The question is, is this a spitting match between Russell Simmons and Abe Foxman? Does Abe Foxman have a point when he says that, Farrakhan has said some anti-Semitic things? To me, far more problematic is the relationship with Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is a flamethrower not just in terms of religion, and maybe that's why they don't focus on him so much. But, I mean, Malik has said some things that I'm not even sure Farrakhan would have said.
Very extreme guy.
Yeah, he's a pretty extreme guy. Now,
my question is, and it is in a lot of different cases, is that at what point do you believe that something more than just the language has changed? At what point do you believe that something, more than just, politics is going on when somebody stops using harsh language because of criticism?
Well, look, first of all, I have spent quality time with Minister Louis Farrakhan over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I know him, from having sat and talked with him literally for 3 hours one time.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in my heart of hearts that he as an individual is an anti-Semite. However, I also know that he uses language sometimes to make particular points that most people would consider to be anti-Semitic. And I don't know whether he does it on purpose. I'm not sure exactly what the real reason for it is. But I do know that the man is very careful about his language. So I don't think he says these things by accident either. But I do believe that he is, first of all, most people don't realize, outside the black community, he's a very conservative man. The type of Islam that he espouses is very conservative Islam.
Well, that's, it's interesting what Russell Simmons was saying, because I've read some of the quotes that Farrakhan has said, and they're talking about specific incidents. But, when you're talking to millions of people, even if it's an intimate subject, it becomes doctrine on some level.
Well, see, with Farrakhan, what you have to realize is the man will speak off the cuff for 3 hours at a clip in front of him. I mean, you can take a small clip of what he says, but if you listen to the whole or watch or read the whole 3 hours, he says a lot of stuff that's fascinating.
Right. I'm going to have to read some of that stuff. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we already talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. All right, Rumsfeld defends the U.S. military against detainee abuse allegations. The defense chief also boasted the military prepared meals that suited Muslim religious beliefs, then wrapped them in pages from the Quran and flushed him down the toilet. Rumsfeld also blasted an Amnesty International report that compared U.S. prison camps to Soviet-style gulags. He argued the U.S. camps were all set in warm climates, so they were much more like, say, a Cambodian death farm. Rumsfeld says detainees are allowed to pray all the time. Prayers like, oh, God, no, please, God, not the hose. All right, then. South Korean cloning pioneer Hwang Woo-suk plans to open stem cell bank. It was Woo-suk's team that previously shocked the world by cloning a human embryo. Shocked the world for about a minute or two, then the world went back to wondering who Paula Abdul screwed. Will the Reverend Al Sharpton accept Rush Limbaugh as his radio host tutor? The main thing the Reverend Al wants to learn from Rush is how to go to a bank and withdraw $10 million somebody paid you for talking on the radio. Today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. You know why America hates the media coverage of the prison abuse story? Because they can't call in and vote for their favorite torturer. Wake up, people. Gulag is Russian for Gitmo. Tomorrow at City Bakery, Riley.
Have fun. This is Air America Radio.